TBRI.
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 TOVD.
TBRI.
TBRI. Trust-based relational intervention.
TBRI is an attachment-based
trauma-informed intervention
that is designed to meet the complex needs
of vulnerable children.
TBRI uses empowering principles
to address physical needs,
connecting principles for attachment needs,
and correcting principles to disarm fear-based behaviors.
While TBRI is based on years of attachment, sensory processing, and neuroscience research,
the heartbeat of TBRI is connection.
Hello and welcome to the TBRI podcast. You're listening to Season 5, Episode 4. On this show, we talk all about trust-based relational intervention, or TBRI. We talk about different elements of the model itself, and also about how TBRI is applied in various systems of care and practice. Today, we're welcoming Troy McPeak to the podcast. Troy has joined us on the TBRI podcast before, but if you haven't heard his previous episodes, go back and listen in season one. Today, we actually get to chat with Troy as an employee of the Institute. Troy joined our team as a training specialist a few months ago, and we are so thrilled to have him as part of the KPICD family. Today's episode is all about TBRI in the context of coaching. If you have kids in youth sports, or if you've ever coached youth sports, this episode is for you. We hope you enjoy this conversation between our host, Sarah Mercado, and Troy McPeak.
Welcome back to the podcast, Troy.
Thank you, Sarah.
Man, we're excited to hear from you again. I have been ruminating on this episode for a long time because, you know, you probably know I'm a pretty avid youth sports fan. I love to see the kids out there having fun and playing. But over the years, as I learned TBRI, I discovered like, oh, maybe we're not doing this quite right. So would you just share with us, you know, you've obviously come to the Institute, maybe a little bit about the changes in your world, and then we'll get into talking about coaching.
Yes, ma'am. So like you just said, I'm in a huge transition right now with moving from Texas Juvenile Justice Department, where I was serving, you know, at-risk youth within secure, what I like to call prisons, right, for juveniles across the state, into now my role as a training and consultation specialist with the KPICD. So incredibly excited, but I still get to serve in the arena of juvenile justice. So that was a real big draw for me because I have a huge passion for what can be considered the, you know, throwaway kids or, you know, kids that are forgotten, lost in the system.
Yeah. And well, we are so delighted to have you. It's been so much fun already. And I know we have a lot of fun ahead. And, you know, I think your impact has already been immeasurable. And so we look forward to seeing the next level as you enter this work. So we have, over the years, you were a TBRI mentor with us in our trainings, and you would do some of our sensory breaks. And we got to see this awesome video of you coaching the boys and them kind of doing, I think you called it a breakdown drill. I might mess that up.
A squad drill.
A squad drill. Forgive me, please. And, you know, you can see the compliance. You can see the kids doing exactly what you're asking them to do. They're in sync. They are locked and loaded. They are so ready to engage in you this way. But what I feel is the connection. And we know that that is the heartbeat of what we're trying to do. How do you get that connection in there? In what is typically a very much I say you do type of environment.
Absolutely. Just really having fun with it, right? And just incorporating play whenever you can. You know, I'm a very high structured, like if you came out to a practice, this ran like a well-oiled machine.
Right.
I mean, to the point where if the kids' feet are beyond the white line, oh, there's consequences for that, right? Because that translates into jumping off sides. That translates into not knowing, you know, the proper count or, you know, whatever, right? It ends up hurting the team as a whole if you're not taking care of your role, right? And paying attention to the details. So, but with that, right, even though I'm very high structured and things are ran like a very well-oiled machine, I'm the biggest goofball out there on the field, right? Mm. And the kids have nicknames, you know, and, you know, I've got nicknames and, you know, they chase me after practice or in between sets, or you can catch me and the other coaches bantering back and forth about offense and defense and who's winning. So we just make sure that we keep it lively, right? We run it. I'm not going to say like military style, right? But as far as the structure, you know what I mean? And what's expected is definitely very high. But again, we just really flood the team with laughter, love, and play. Right. And then that results in just max effort. So I've got a mantra. It's called GAME, G-A-M-E, great attitude, right? And max effort. You take great care attitude. Of those two things, everything take care of itself.
All right. Great attitude and max effort. So it basically sounds like you just said structure and nurture, right? Absolutely. Like we're incorporating a ton of play. We're doing our best to keep the kids in their upstairs brains. And at the same time, we can have the high expectations because we are connected, because we are playing, because we know that play disarms fear so that they're able to be in those upstairs brains. I love that. And I love the idea. Now I have a whole new picture in my head of all these little kids chasing you around the field. So I think I might need to come to practice just to see
I'm
that
telling
part.
You, I'm still kind of fast. My hamstrings hurt afterward, but I'm still pretty nifty.
The kids are always good at letting us know just how old we are in some fashion, right?
Yes,
you know, football is a game of dysregulation. When I talk about regulation, I talk about there are times in our lives that we want our kids to be upregulated. And oftentimes the example I use is like, you don't want the guy on the line in football to be, you know, downregulated. Like we want him hungry and ready and fired up and his, you know, and all that pumped up. And so I'm wondering how you balance the need for that level of kind of amped up dysregulation with bringing them back down to teach them a new skill, to explain why your toe can't be over the line, why that level of detail is so important. Because I know you're trying to build champions, right? Like you guys win and you win big. And so I'm curious how you go from high dysregulation in a moment to bringing them back in to a calm space where they can listen and learn to the next instruction. What is there breathing? Well, is there?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So it's everything we teach proactively, right? It reminds me almost of a nurture group, right? So we're purposely getting people dysregulated to help calm that system, right? And, you know, we talked about that balance of nurture, structure, and incorporating play. One thing we also know is that you learn a skill a lot faster if you incorporate play. Now, I didn't know that pre-TBRI, right? And I didn't really play quite as much either out there on the field. But, you know, if we're working on a blitz package, right? Let me just give an example. I have a blitz package called Rocket. Now, that requires the defensive end attacking the outside shoulder of the tackle or tight end, whoever's the end man on the line of scrimmage, but bowing 4 to 5 yards outside and getting 3 yards up the field. Now, that we call him the Sam linebacker, strong side linebacker. He's going to shoot that C gap. My tackle is going to line up, head up on that, either the tackle or the guard, and he's shooting into the either the B or the A gap, right, depending on their alignment. And then my right outside linebacker is looping up underneath that defensive end, right? So we almost flood the C, B, and C gap, right, with a lot of, what would you call it, just being ferocious, right? Just really attacking that side of the line of scrimmage. And we live on the other side of the ball, right, in the backfield. But if I don't incorporate play, you know, it's going to take more and more reps, right, in order to get that skill or that specific play down pat, because there's so many different moving parts. But you also have to, I don't want to say dumb it down, but water it down and explain it in a way that 6 and 8 year olds can understand.
Right.
So there, you know, if I say bow, that's a tag word for that defensive end to bow outside, right? Rocket, you know, we get to a point. So each individual kid gets their teaching point throughout practice, and we're practicing at a very high intense, right? And you've seen me at practitioner training. My energy is extremely high. Mm-hmm. Now amplify that by 10 out there on the football field.
Yeah, that's terrifying. I have like, I absolutely love to watch football, but I actually have absolutely zero idea what you just said with all of your things in the slots and the I don't know what you said, but it sounds really intriguing. And I bet there are coaches that are listening to this that are going to steal that. So you just gave a insider trick away for how to sack the quarterback. I think it's
what you said. So I've got a whole blitz package for you. If you're listening and you want some blitz packages at this, especially youth football, because offensive coordinators aren't accounting for, you know, that level of aggression. I got you. Right.
Okay. Cool. Well, listeners, y'all can reach out to Coach Troy for any of your needs regarding that. When we think about those connection strategies, I know we talked about playful engagement. So you've obviously got that. And I know you're also working with a team of coaches. And I'm wondering, what is it like as you're developing this team of coaches to get them to engage in this playful kind of thing? Do you teach them? I mean, I know you don't sit down and have a PowerPoint and go through the engagement strategies, but how do you coach the other coaches to prioritize connection so that you can get the performance that coaches are looking for?
Yeah, so the head coach, Joe, I guess we were kind of co-head coaches, right? Well, I was the defensive coordinator, he was the offensive coordinator. He, like me, kind of naturally embodies TBRI as far as being able to identify and see the needs of what's going on with the kids and building that connection. But I think walking alongside of me over the last 10 years has really picked up his, because a lot of times, even at practice, I'll say, you see how that works, right? That's TBRI. Oh, don't be TBRI in us. Don't be TBRI in us. But really just modeling what it looks like, right? Yeah. So you might have a kid that becomes dysregulated out there on the field. The coaching hat goes away for a second, right? And you pull that kid closer to you. Then I drop down on a knee and get on his level. And now we're looking eye to eye, right? And as he's looking away, I'm asking for eye contact. So we're incorporating all the elements of the engagement strategies, right? Yeah, we might not be calling it, but just the performance, mm-hmm. right? And the active, participation in the engagement strategies models to all the other coaches. Because literally in those high intense moments where it's third and one, and say you give up a first down because somebody missed an assignment, that's not the time to really just start barking at a kid. We got to line up and play the next play. Right. So you talked about, you know, being fired up and then being able to regulate at the same time, because we practice at such a high frequency and very intense. There's always moments where we're taking deep breaths. Right. And if something goes wrong, one of the first things I'll do when I walk up, I'll prompt the kid's chin up by pulling on his face mask a little bit. Look at me right here. Boom. We're going to breathe in. Right. I'm going to do this about four or five times. So now I know that I'm cooling this system, right? And I'm getting him back in his upstairs brain so that he can even process what I need to tell him.
Yeah. Right? If you can, I know a lot of the listeners can't see you, but Troy just modeled like giving him a chin prompt, which for me is like, he's trying to get the eye contact. He pointed to his nose, look right here. And then he's modeling. He says, come on, we're going to take a big deep breath in. And he takes a breath in. And I think it's interesting because I think that kind of the chin prompt to go to eye contact is almost saying, you're okay. This is not a shameful moment. It's fine. I'm here. I'm with you. Like, and so much of that, like you'll see videos of coaches literally being like yelling down on the kids and all that. And those kids, their heads never come up. They live in shame over one mistake on the football field, which, you know, that's shame they carry forever. And so when you literally, like, you made a mistake, you get down on eye level, you say you matter, right? Like, it's okay. Like, come Absolutely. Back to me so that we can regulate and get it back next time. And I just think that is really powerful.
Yeah. I remember coaches almost getting into fist fights with kids, like in high school and whatnot, me growing up playing sports since I was 5 and 6 years old. Literally what you just described, a coach getting in somebody's face, yelling, being very just dogmatic and rigid, you know, and a player just losing it, right? And, you know, literally attacking the coach on the sideline, you know, right? It's happening when I played, you know, D1, JUCO level and in Little League, right? So some people just, they think that that's the way that you break through, and it's really not.
No, and shame is not an educator. It does not educate our kids to do better. It doesn't build connection. It doesn't make them want to be with and like us. And I even think over the years of, my youth sports and remember the coaches I loved, and they were the playful coaches that had fun. And typically we were the ones with the winning teams, right? If we had that coach that did that, we were typically winning. And so, yeah, man, that example kind of gave me goosebumps, because just imagine the difference for, you know, the kid you're coaching versus the experience of another one, and how I bet that these kids beg to be on your team year after year because, because they know they matter, right? Like it's bigger than this moment on the field. Like you are bigger than this moment on the field. So pre-TBRI coach Troy versus post-TBRI coach Troy, any differences there?
Oh, a lot of differences, right?
Yeah.
I mean, not in the necessarily the intensity, right? Mm-hmm. But in the being able to identify what's really needed in the moments, mm-hmm. right? I call it the game within the game, right? Yeah. So, you know, I was very hard on them, right? I was very, you know, your foot's not past the line. You know, you got to hit this A gap. We're going to live in the backfield. And we did. We were, you know, my team is a reflection of me, right? So very high intense. But when things didn't necessarily go right, I didn't have the skills at the time to really take the coach's hat off and put mm-hmm. more of a mentor hat on, if that makes sense, or even the father hat on, right? And even like, especially with my own kids or Coach Joe, that's my counterpart, right? The other head coach, but he's very hard. And as coaches, as fathers of athletes that are on the field, we tend to be more intense with our own. So just that dance of when I see him really on his son, right? I'll tap him on his chest, or I'll hit him two times on his chest. I'll say, I got him. And I pull his son over to me, pull him close. Now, this is the post-TBRI now, right?
Right, right, right.
Because I see his son shutting down. I see, you know, the frustration growing. Now he's, you know, very well-mannered, very disciplined, so on and so forth. But you can start to see the eyes swell up, you know what I mean? And the frustration, and just pull him over. It's funny now because his son and his son's 6'2" and my son's almost 6 feet. But back when they were six, you know, 6 through 10, I could get down on a knee and really, again, prompt by touching your nose. Let's take some deep breaths, right? Tell me what you saw. He might have just thrown an interception and his dad is going crazy, right?
you know, because
he wants him to make the right read and adjustment and all of that good stuff. But you know, just being able to tap out and really see what's going on and what's needed in the moment. Right now, this kid needs to get his lid back on, right?
Yeah, yeah. And that's an incredible game of mindfulness in a really intense situation. Right. And I coached my girls, all their little league stuff along the way. I loved it. But it doesn't matter how old the kids are. It's an intense thing, right? Like we have a different level of intensity. And I even think like one of the things I wish I knew, because I coached their basketball teams, was how just dysregulating a gym is with a million basketballs bouncing all over the place. Right. Like I just wish I had known little things like that along the way to say, like, even as a parent, like, oh, this environment is not one where we're ever going to be successful, because the noise in here alone is going to send my kid to their downstairs brain, right? Like, so I do wish I had known so much more. And we weren't champions, Troy, but we had a lot of fun. We did win some, but there was no championship in my little town in Texas. So,
you know, what the championship is how strong were those connections made? To me, that's the real champion.
Right? Isn't that the truth? Yeah.
You know, my kids earned a lot of trophies along the way, and we did win state championship and got really close a couple other times. But at the end of the day, the fact that these boys can now at 17, 18 years old be running in my garage, shooting me, Coach Troy, with an Orbi gun in the forehead yesterday, that means everything, right?
Yeah.
Because now I've had, you know, continued influence mm-hmm. on their life and the trajectory that these young men have decided to be, you know, great students, continue to athletes, right? And I'm always Coach Troy.
Yep. Yep. And like, because you're so connected to them and because you have that high structure and high nurture, which is like the gold standard, right? Like you can elevate your expectations to what their potential is, right? Like we would never go beyond a kid's potential and expectations, but like it seems like because you have that high level, and I love that story, but because you have that high level of nurture, structure, and connection, you can walk out of your office and get pinged by one of these kids, you know, when they're having like a water gun fight, essentially. Wow. And it's not a thing that sends you to your downstairs brain. It's like, give me that. I'm coming for you. Right. Like I want to engage in this play. And that's exactly what they're trying to do is get you to. And I just love like the cycle of that happening over and over and over. And for you, it's been years now with these kids. So how cool. So I have a friend who just put her daughter in youth sports for the first time. The daughter is on the spectrum. She was so scared because she knew what it was like to be coached as a kid. And she just put on the child's application, you know, a little bit about the kid. She's this, and this. She's also high functioning with autism. And I need a coach that can help with that. Yeah. And I mean, literally for me, as I watched that play out, I was like, oh no, oh no, no, oh no. And by the grace of God, literally that baby ended up with the perfect coach for her. And I mean, she would wander around. I went to a game. She like wandered around that field. Like there was not a game happening around her. You know, the kids are running by her. It was a whole thing. It was incredible to watch, but every chance he could, he gave her a chance to touch that ball. Right. So she did the goal kick, she did the throw-ins, he engaged her in such ways, and never once did you hear him yell or fuss or correct her for not being engaged in ways that she isn't able. Right. So how would you encourage parents to, you know, visit with coaches, talk with coaches, advocate for their kids that aren't going to be stars, but can still have such a profound impact by being involved in youth sports? How would you encourage those parents to really communicate well in a way that a coach can hear and understand?
Yeah, that's a good question, sir. I don't know that I have, you know, a definitive answer for that question, but it is what you just said, right? Advocate for your kid and seek out a coach that you recognize is attentive to not just the superstars, but to all of the kids on the team, right? And I think that's one thing that Joe and I did really well, right? We had maybe, we call them the Fab Five, right? Five kids that grew up together. They were kind of the nucleus of the team that scored all the touchdowns, played quarterback, were the stars, but everybody has an equally important role. Mm-hmm. And that was the message. I don't care if you're, you know, Bo Jackson on this field right now, right? Or Emmitt Smith might be somebody, you know.
Okay.
Right. But if you don't have a great attitude, max effort, and aren't working for this team, right? And being selfless, then we don't need you on this team.
Right.
And that was always the message, because little Johnny that might only get 10 plays a game is just as important. Right. Because it's not about the game. It's about development of young men or young ladies. So finding a coach that sees sports in that fashion. And for me, it's real personal, because I honestly feel like football saved my life growing up where I come from, right? I could have easily been involved in gangs, and with my temperament, it would have been a very costly decision. Just putting it like that. So being able to be involved with sports since I was five all the way through 25, literally, it's got me here talking to you. So
yeah. It's just so good. It is so tricky though, because I think, just like you said, I think what happens in youth sports is so incredibly important for the kids, and it's a great opportunity for them to learn so many things beyond winning and losing, so many things beyond, you know, throwing a spiral or kicking a goal or, you know, serving an ace, like, you know, whatever it is we're doing. And I just think the idea that we could start to really garner coaches that are willing to try new things, because it's good for the kids. And it's good for the whole, right? Like it's good for the other kids to cheer for the kids that don't have all of the things that our kids may have had, as far as parenting, as far as opportunities, right? Like all those things. And all of our kids can come around one another and celebrate that.
Yeah, I think about all the, when you said that, I think about all like the single moms that will bring their children out to sports, right? And then the single moms that their son was on the team below us, but wasn't quite of age yet. Mm-hmm. And I remember the year I stepped away, how many mothers came and said, "Oh man, we were waiting and looking forward to, you know, little Johnny coming up to be coached with you and Joe. And, you know, I'm sorry, but Noah, you know, he's gone in high school and I'm not coaching right. anymore. I'm sorry, you know," but just that role. And sometimes you wear, well, not sometimes, all the times you wear so many different hats, mm-hmm. right? And you're looked at by these kids as much more than just a coach. And I remember my coach since I was 6 years old, flag football until about 10. And then I started moving up the ranks. His name is Jim Jernigan, right? But the greatest coach I ever had, you know, mm-hmm. and he wasn't a D1 coach. He was a volunteer dad, right? Him yep. and his son were out there. Jason, one of my best friends, you know, growing up. But, you know, Jim installed all of the hard work, all of the discipline, right? And he knew TBRI without knowing TBRI, because we would right. be at his house jumping on the trampoline and going swimming, and all the parents would be there. He just had this community mm-hmm. vibe to him, right, where all the parents were welcome, all the kids were welcome, and it became much more than just Moreno Valley 49ers. Mm-hmm. It was a brotherhood, and that's yeah. where that squad drill kind yeah. of formed, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's just all that connection, and it's bigger than a win or a loss, right? Like it's really a lifetime thing, and when you look at all the gifts that you've given these kids over the years, it's some of the pain you haven't given too, right? So you've given them the gift of connection, you've given them the gift of regulation, you've given them all these things, but you also haven't given them shame, you know, you haven't given them some of that pain and stuff. And even when we slip up, because I don't know about you, Troy, but I still require redos. I did not come from, you know, a TBRI background. This was foreign to me when I first learned it. Even if I slip up, I can go right back and reconnect with that kid. I can apologize. I handled that poorly. And then we can go on with our day. And it's like just that role modeling that I imagine these boys got from you on that field for so many years. It's just overwhelming to think about.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't ever think about it until, you know, you're in a reflective conversation like this, right? But you're, you know, you're absolutely right, because I don't think I portray or project any weakness, right? I feel like I'm a symbol of strength.
Right, right, right. And it's not a weakness thing, right? It's a, right. it's a willingness to connect, which is actually a strength, I absolutely. Think, you know, yeah. so. That's yeah. cool. So if you were going to tell coaches that are listening to this, or if somebody sent it to them to say like, "Hey, look, you need to try something new." And they're like, "What on earth just happened?" What's one place you would just encourage them to start?
Man, just be in the lighthouse, right? Inspiring hope in ways that you could never imagine based on the connections that you're able to build by being very intentional and being able to recognize the game within the game, right? So yeah, X's and O's, right? Touchdowns, you know, extra points, whatever. That's all the game, but the course of manhood, right? And learning so many invaluable tools needed to be successful in this world, right? I would just say be the lighthouse. Right. And understand that you wear multiple hats out there on that field. And if you're just punitive, constantly screaming and yelling at kids, you're not going to do anything but turn them away. And if you are the only one, then where are they going to turn to? It's going to be the streets. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So I love what, you know, Dr. Cross and Karen Purvis always says. And I think it's on the mantra of the shirt, right? If not you, then who? Mm-hmm. I was willing to step into that role and be connected. And I'm going to continue to stay connected.
Yeah. Right. Well, be the lighthouse. Troy, thank you so much for being here today. What a fun and encouraging interview this has been. We're grateful for your time.
I'm grateful for you, Sarah. Thank you.
The TBRI podcast is produced by the Karen Purvis Institute of Child Development at TCU. To learn more about TBRI and the resources mentioned in this episode, please visit child.tcu.edu/podcast.